Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, the podcast. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Thank you also for the responses we've had to the last couple of podcasts, where I was delighted to introduce Sam Stevens, or Lord Snooty, as he's known, to his growing army of followers. Sam, you've made a big impression. You've got high standards now to keep up. Are you up to it?
Yes, I think so. I'm delighted to see that on my quest to see if I could find some intelligent life on Planet Porky, that the listeners have indeed delivered. And I think there is a little bit of brain power out there. So I'm delighted to hear that. Some very much in agreements with you and I, Porky, about some of the things we've been saying. So
that sounds like a bit of a slight to me.
Is it?
Finding intelligent life on Planet Porky.
Well, you know,
I am Planet Porky.
Sometimes question
is
it.
Has that passed you by? That reminds you, by the way, that I am Planet Porky. I remember one of the things my father told me growing up. Do you remember a guy called Mickey Rooney?
Oh, yeah.
Because the reason I remember that is because whenever Wayne Rooney had a poor game or something like that, you know, he used to get all the barbs on social network. You know, Wayne Rooney, you know, rather have Mickey Rooney and all that kind of stuff for years and years, because it's an Irish name exported to America and England. You
yes,
know what I mean?
Of course.
But no, I remember my father telling me that Mickey Rooney was the world's biggest star, apparently, in Hollywood. Well, yeah, I mean, you being a thespian, you probably catch up on the great stars of the past, Marlene Dietrich and all that.
Yeah.
But Mickey Rooney was apparently, he was the world's biggest, you know, movie star in like the 1950s. And I was born in the 50s, so I wouldn't have known. But my father, of course, went through the Second World War and, you know, ships docked in America, and everybody talked about Mickey Rooney all the time. And I remember my father telling me that the whole of Britain started to hate Mickey Rooney the day he got off the Queen Mary, you know, at Southampton or something like that. And he was apparently, he was only about 5'2".
Oh, was he?
And he came strolling down the gangplank, you know. And all the guys in our profession in those days had these huge box cameras,
oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And was be standing there, you know, with a pencil and a notepad, you know, hey, Mickey! Yeah. Hey, Mickey, you know, how's things in Hollywood? And he apparently stopped, looked at them and answered, I am Hollywood. And from that moment on, everybody in this country hated him because he was so arrogant. By the way, talking about great Hollywood stars in this country, did you know that Frank Sinatra's career was saved by an appearance at Batley Social Club?
Was it?
Yeah, his whole career. Frank Sinatra started off as a singer.
Yeah.
And he made a few songs and all that kind of stuff.
Then, I think he ended life as a singer as well, if I'm honest.
He certainly did end life as a singer. But apparently he went into this lull post-war. I don't know why, you know. And a bit like, there's a film out recently, Sam, about Judy what's-her-namer, you know?
Oh, yeah, Judy Garland.
Judy Garland, that's right. And it was about the last years of her life. And,
yes.
And she ended up touring Britain to try and revive her career, but died while it was going on, didn't she?
I think that's right.
Is the plot, you know, and all that. Well, apparently Frank Sinatra came. I mean, he couldn't get a booking at London Palladium or anything like that. Ended up in Yorkshire for some bizarre reason that re-triggered his career. And when he went back to America, decided that as his career in America had flopped, he'd try an acting role. He took an acting role in From Here to Eternity, is that right?
Right, yeah.
And won an Oscar.
Yes.
In his first acting role. And all of a sudden, you know, can you imagine that? One minute he was flat on his back, he's down and out, nobody had ever heard of Frank Sinatra anymore, he was finished. The next minute he was a huge Hollywood star and then became an American legend, didn't he?
That, without question, yeah. And of course, both in the acting and singing world.
Yeah,
as well.
That's what
tremendous.
I mean.
Yeah,
how fantastic. Can you straddle those two professions as well as Sinatra did? And of course, he sung My Way. I always thought My Way was written for him by, you know, one of the great songwriters like Paul Anka. It was a French song. My Way was a French song, French to start off with,
of course.
And then somebody got the melody and then wrote the words and all that kind of stuff.
I know that when he was in Guys and Dolls, Frank Sinatra, the great musical Guys and Dolls, he was hoping to sing the main title song from it and got very, very jealous that Marlon Brando got given the song instead, and so ended up making it after Luck Be a Lady, the song's called. And Luck Be a Lady, the song's called, from Guys and Dolls. And after the fact, he sort of went around and made sure he put it as part of his set whenever he was singing it, because he was
jealous. Even know Marlon Brando could sing.
Yeah, apparently so. Oh, a little bit, yeah. Apparently.
Well, I've never heard Marlon Brando sing.
Oh, there we go.
That's amazing. Marlon Brando's most famous in my lifetime for dying in The Godfather 1.
Yes, indeed.
Is that
right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And also, didn't he play Fletcher in Fletcher Christian in Mutiny on the Bounty?
That sounds right, yeah. Haven't seen it, but sounds right.
Some of these stars amaze me as one-off singers.
Yes.
John Travolta.
Yes.
But John Travolta was the disco king dancer who was the most sought-after man in the world by the female race. And obviously, he made two great films, didn't he? Saturday Night Fever, and then what was the next one?
Grease.
Grease, that's the one, exactly, yeah. Grease is the name, da, 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 da. Who sang that? Frankie Valli.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was during my disco era as well. In fact, that did a lot to promote my disco era. Night Fever, and all that.
both written by the Bee Gees, though, by the way. Saturday Night Fever written by the Bee Gees, of course. And
the whole thing's
the final song from Grease written by the Bee Gees as well.
Everything was written by the Bee Gees.
It was back then, yes.
And the Bee Gees went and wrote songs for all sorts of other
yes,
people.
Yes, they did.
One of my favourite songs is by Barbra Streisand.
Oh, yeah.
And you say, Barbra Streisand, why? Because the Bee Gees wrote Woman in Love.
Yes.
I am a woman in love, and I do anything to get you into my heart.
Is that one of your favourite songs?
Yeah, it's one of my favourite songs because actually, the Bee Gees do the backing vocals,
yes,
and they're more powerful than Barbra Streisand.
Sure,
so it's almost like a Bee Gees song.
Yeah,
absolutely. So John Travolta sings, I need you, there's no denying, and I'm losing. What are you laughing at?
No, you're right.
Losing control or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know why these people do all these things. Now, listen, talk about all people famous and all that kind of stuff. We're now into the nearly week three of the WAG War.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I just can't believe it. What do you make of it?
I mean, it's an extraordinary situation, isn't it? It's basically become the talk of the town.
Yeah,
after a tweet that Colleen Rooney put out about this sort of situation where she's been kind of looking into exactly who's been kind of prying and maybe potentially allegedly selling stories to the papers, all this kind of stuff.
I think it's brilliant the way it blew up. I mean, I've never spoken to Wayne Rooney or Colleen. Despite the fact that I'm probably Wayne Rooney's biggest fan.
Sure.
Got his first England shirt.
But you've never spoken to him?
I've never spoken to him. Got his boots. I missed speaking to him once when he was in the chairman's suite at Everton.
Oh, yeah.
But he had a hoodie on, and I didn't realise it was him. And I walked past him three times. Honest to God. Well, you couldn't recognise him. You know, it just fell to his eyes.
Was that the first time round or second time round when he was at Everton?
It was when he was at Manchester United.
Right.
And United had been knocked out of the FA Cup. Everton was still in the FA Cup. So he came back to his old club just to give them support. Okay?
I see.
And he was a Manchester United player. But I had an opportunity to interview him at TalkSport about 2 or 3 years ago. But I was out of the country on the day that he volunteered to be interviewed.
Right, right.
And I couldn't get there. And I think Mark Saggers went and talked to him.
That's right.
On other occasions, I mean, I know Paul Stretford better than his agent. Better than I know Wayne Rooney. And I've spoken to Paul 3 or 4 times on the phone. I've met Paul at football matches. Every time it's been, I'm going to fix you up to meet Wayne. You want to see Wayne? Yeah, you're going to talk to Wayne. You're going to interview Wayne. It never happened.
Right.
And I'm not the sort of bloke who would, like, stand outside the training ground at Manchester United or anything. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like that.
Sure.
If it had happened. And the amazing thing is, I spoke to so many people popular in the game over the years, but never, ever Wayne Rooney never came into, you know the people we've met during our working life. You know,
yes.
Just recently, Sam Allardyce, Ray Parler,
David Seaman,
David Seaman, Ozzy Ardiles, a World Cup winner, okay? You see him all the time, you know. You go meet Al for a drink and some other great football star there, Ali McCoist or something like that, you know what I mean? And yet Wayne Rooney never came into that.
It's quite remarkable, really, isn't it?
It is remarkable because I always wanted to see him. And of course, you know, knowing Mr. Kenwright so well in the days when Wayne was first at Everton, young man, I used to go and I used to sit in the director's box while Mr. Kenwright was melting with the brilliance of Wayne Rooney on the pitch out there. And I thought, I wonder if I should say to Mr. Kenwright, you know, would it be possible to nip down and say hello to... But I never did, because you'd feel like a stargazer, wouldn't you? You know what I mean?
I guess time will come, though, with that, won't it? Because, I mean, Rooney's still got a professional career, which, unlike a lot of the players from our sort of... my generation, as it were, are retiring now. You know, the likes of Frank Lampard, Rio Ferdinand, all gone into punditry, will do the rounds from time to time, won't they? Go to all the little media institutions to promote something, a book or whatever, a film, whatever they're in, whatever they're starring in.
Sure.
Rooney hasn't done that yet, of course, because his career is still going strong. I mean, he's currently out in America, but he's going to be coming over here very soon again, coming
very
back
soon.
here. Yeah. And at some point, you would think he'll be retiring, and maybe he may go into coaching, but he might do a little bit of punditry or whatever here and there. He might have a book out, that kind of thing. So he might still come into contact with him. But I suppose at the moment, his playing days are still strong.
They're strong, but you're absolutely right. They're peaking out. He's moving into his £20 million house when he comes back in the new year. I don't know how long the Derby thing will last. I don't know whether it's player, coach or whatever.
They have history with that, of course, with Frank Lampard, don't they?
With
world-class players becoming managers, that sort of thing. So you never know where it might lead to.
I think it'd be very difficult for Wayne Rooney to become a coach.
Yeah.
Because I think he's so famous to young footballers. I mean, you remember he's England's record goal scorer. He's Manchester United's record goal scorer. Yep. Does he have the record number of appearances for an outfield player? I can't remember now. Because Shilton's on 125, somebody's on 116, and I can't remember.
I think Beckham might be above him. He's certainly up there, isn't he?
It's in the 115-16 sort of mark, you know what I mean? And I wonder whether you can adjust to life as a coach. Also, these guys are so wealthy. I mean, you know, Jose Mourinho, he's worth about £100 million.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you know, he was getting paid something like £15 million a year at Manchester United. And I'm told, you know, because the contract ended a year early, there was a £15 million payoff.
I'm sure.
I mean, and that's only 3 or 4 years of his life. You're talking about £45 million. So it's no wonder that he's worth £100 million.
And all his endorsements and all the rest of it that you get with being Jose Mourinho.
Absolutely right. You know, watches and all sorts of things. You say to yourself, blimey. And also, people like Ronaldo. I don't think Ronaldo can ever be a coach.
No, I agree.
He's worth £1 billion.
Yes.
I know it sounds ludicrous, but he is. You know, he gets paid about £1 million a week for playing football. That's why I went to Juventus. And about another £500,000 a week for endorsements, as you quite rightly say. Well, that's £20 million a year. I'm going mad. That's 75, 80 million a year. And that's been going on for like 10 years. You see what I mean?
He's also the most followed celebrity on Instagram. So that tells you how his level of fame.
How many has he got? Is it 77 million?
No, it's 160 million, something like that. I mean, it's probably gone up by the time we've heard this. But it's about, I think it's something like that. But it's something ridiculous. And as you say, he's so mega famous. I mean, there's no way he could coach, really.
No, I don't think there's any way he could coach at all.
The problem that Rooney has, if I'm honest, is that I think because he was such a natural footballer, I'm not sure whether he'd be able to transmit the type of knowledge that a coach would have, sort of the graft and the hard work. I mean, he's got graft and hard work about him. But everything came so easy to him, you know, that players in the past who've had that natural ability have found it difficult to translate to coaching. I mean, Glenn Hoddle always struggled with that, didn't he?
Glenn Hoddle struggled terribly. And I've spoken to players who played under Glenn as a coach. Tony Cascarino.
Sure.
Has gone on record as saying that Glenn always found it very difficult to understand why, when he was asking players to do things, they couldn't really do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a sort of mental block and all that kind of stuff. Great guy, Glenn, by the way. He had that terrible problem with his heart and all that and came back from it.
Thankfully
he's all right now. Yeah. But it was all... Anyway, so getting back to Wags we're talking about, okay? So Colleen, who... She was a wag in a sense that, you know, she married Wayne Rooney. I remember them in Baden. Baden was the famous wag fest, wasn't it, in Germany in 2006.
Right. Okay. Childhood sweethearts, though, aren't they? I mean, they've been together for a long time,
I believe. When Wayne Rooney scored that amazing goal for Everton against Arsenal, which put him on the map, you know what I mean, and ended Arsenal's invincible run, Colleen was still appearing in the school play. I mean, that's how far back they go.
Sure.
And they first met a year before that when Wayne put the chain back on Colleen's bike, right?
Right.
Didn't we have a story about a chain coming off a bike in an earlier podcast?
I don't think so.
A chain coming off a bike? No, I don't think it was. It's something else I heard about somebody's bike. Must have been something to do with the Tour de France, probably. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, she did a bit of the wag stuff early on because it was what all the England wives were doing. You know what I mean? And we ourselves in the media were definitely culpable of wanting to build the wags up.
Yeah.
Wag, of course, being wife and girlfriend. We invented the title.
Yes.
Wife or girlfriend, wife and girlfriends. And the wags. Now, once Colleen became a mother, her interest in waggery seemed to disappear.
Waggery?
Yeah, well, that's
such a pursuit, is it? Waggery?
I mean, what I couldn't believe is, because I checked all these figures out, reading this fantastic story between her and, of course, Mrs. Vardy.
Yes.
What's her first name?
Rebecca.
Rebecca Vardy, and we'll recap on the story in a minute. But apparently, Colleen still got like £3 million off a TV company to do a series of programmes on, you know, self-help for young girls, self-improvement and all that. She apparently, and I didn't know this, the Rooneys got over £1 million for the rights to their wedding pictures.
Right,
all this kind of stuff. So they're just a money-making machine.
Of course.
But she lost interest, I think. She's now a mother of four boys, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? Four.
Incredible.
Do you know Alan Brazil, by the way, talking about single sex of your children, has got three daughters, and one of his daughters has got three daughters, and he's got three nieces. Or is it two? No, two nieces. So in Al's house, right,
wow.
If you took a picture of him, it's Al sitting in the throne there, right, and his wife standing next to him, you've then got three daughters, three granddaughters, and two nieces. There's not another single man in their family line. Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible, yeah. That is incredible. That seems to happen in some families, doesn't it?
Well, I think Ronnie Aronne had the same, didn't he?
Did he?
Didn't Ronnie have three daughters?
He may have done.
Yeah, I think so.
I know the boxer George Foreman had like six sons, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and they were all called George Foreman. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, George Foreman, first, second, third, and all that.
That's easy to remember, at least.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so what I'm saying is, I think Colleen became very much first a mother, you know, second a housewife, you know.
Sure.
Her responsibility was to bring her four kids up.
Yeah.
Because remember, Wayne in recent years has worked in America. Colleen's not always been there with him and all that kind of stuff. She's had to really basically run the nuclear family from here. So I don't think she's very interested in waggery. But let's recap for our millions of listeners what happened here. What happened here was she felt that when she was putting the odd picture on Instagram, was it?
Yes.
That's right. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of this. You probably know better than me. But you can have private Instagram accounts.
That's right.
Where only a certain individual can access
That's right.
them. And apparently, she knocked down every single person who had individual to one person. She claims that person was Rebecca Vardy.
Well, the account of Rebecca Vardy, at least.
The account of Rebecca Vardy. It's still Rebecca Vardy's name on it.
That's Rebecca Vardy's name on it, yeah.
And that she started then planting stories. I must admit, the first time I read that story about the basement of the new £20 million house being flooded,
oh yeah,
a question mark and a light bulb went off in my head.
The journalistic instinct told you something wasn't quite right there, did it?
My journalistic instinct told me that anybody who's getting a blinking house built worth £20 million is not going to have flooded basements. And if they, I mean, when you say a basement, you're talking about where they build a swimming pool and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You know, the sauna room and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, a swimming pool's flooded, isn't it, by nature of it?
Well, a swimming pool has to be full of water, obviously, exactly. You know, yeah. But what I'm saying is they're saying water pouring down the stairs.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't understand that because, you know, I've invested in a bit of property over my year time. Some of it's been what you call off plan. So you go see it being built, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And you realise that builders put in all sorts of provisions to make sure it doesn't get flooded.
Have you seen many £20 million houses in your time, Mike?
No, I've never seen a £20 million house.
No.
I'm just trying to think, what, £20 million house? Oh, I mean, you'd have to be talking about Woburn Abbey or something like that, you know what I mean? I mean, of course,
that's probably more like a £200 million house.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, or $2 trillion or something like that. But no, the point I'm thinking, when I saw it, I thought, wow, that is very strange. What a strange story! And immediately, I thought this could be a fantastic story because the story is about spending £20 million on a house where the basements get flooded. There's something terribly wrong about this.
Sure
enough, the next day, the real story comes out. According to Colleen, she planted that story on her Instagram page. Rebecca Vardy's account was the only one that had access to it. It appeared in the Sun newspaper the following day. And the day after that, Colleen broke cover and said, right, I've trapped Rebecca Vardy into using this bum story. And she was quite clever and she must have had a media manager because when the Sun rang up, because people think, you know, the media just published stories willy-nilly. You don't. You have to check them out. When they rang and put it to her people, can you give us a comment about, they said no comment. Now, if you don't deny a story, a newspaper has the right to go ahead and publish it.
Sure. Sure.
Because you say, well, we put it to them. They didn't want to make any comment. So you assume it's true, you know, whatever. And so the bells rang in my head on that one, and sure enough. Now, everybody thought it'd be a one-day spat, but then all the other sort of wags, you know, launched in, Lizzie Cundy, all that kind of stuff. And it's still going on. And the thing is, Sam, that will have massive reverberations within the football family.
Yes.
Because people will start taking sides.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you picked this up during the course of the story. I think it developed last week. But during the 2016 tournament, was it? Yeah, 2016. Where was that? It was in Brazil, was it?
Yes.
2016, yeah. Apparently,
no, 2016 was a European Championship.
European Championship,
yeah.
In France. France, that's right. Yeah, big pardon. Yeah, I think it was 2016. Apparently Wayne Rooney, who was team captain, had to go to Vardy and say, could you tell your missus to stop being so mouthy on Instagram and social network about what's happening in the camp?
Because
the manager had gone to him and said, there seems to be an awful lot of information about what's happening in the camp. And basically, allegedly, Wayne Rooney asked Jamie Vardy if he could just have a, you know, because, I mean, when you're in those camps, you ring your wife every night and you're chatting and how did it go today? And you might have said something funny like, oh, you know, they ran out of cornflakes this morning or something like that. That would suddenly appear on social media.
Well,
you know
you've,
I mean?
You've been head of communication at the FA, haven't you? So,
yes, I have.
I mean, you must know what it, I mean, leaks must be so easy to, there must be so, such easy things to happen in the course of a major tournament, that kind of thing.
Of course,
because players are always going to be, they might try and keep stuff under wraps, but they're always going to tell somebody something, aren't they?
Well, you tell your mates things and your mates tell their mates. You see what I mean? I mean, it can be completely innocent. You know, I remember Michael Owen telling me once that, you know, he let some great secret out of the camp, not because he wanted to, but because he spoke to somebody who was a mate who then, you know, went into a pub, was telling somebody else, and somebody else overheard. You know what I mean? It so easily happens.
Yeah.
It's not intent. That's the way stories get out, you know. But no, it'll be interesting to see where the WAG wars end up. Let's hope that, you know, it's not... well, it's not daggers drawn amongst WAGs, is it? I suppose it's...
Waggers drawn.
And fair dues to the newspaper sub-editor who came up with the great expression. What did he say that Colleen Rooney was? She was the WAG...
Wagatha Christie.
Wagatha Christie. Love it. Well done, Sam. Lord Snooty's got it right again. OK, folks, this is Mike Porky Parry, and I'm delighted to be able to tell you that in association with Planet Porky, I can introduce you to Harry's. Harry's Grooming, Harry's Shaving Products. They are fantastic, and I have become a huge fan. Why have I become a huge fan? Well, because of the closeness, the smooth, comfortable glide that you feel on your face with that razor, okay? Foaming shave gel, absolutely wonderful. Believe me, frothy as you like. And most of all, I think, the textured grip of the razor. Feel that in your hand, believe me. It's absolutely terrific, okay? It's a brand new product, but it's making its mark all over the world, literally. Let me tell you the story of Harry. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with overpriced razors, as we all have been over the years, they started Harry's to try and fix shaving, okay? Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so guess what? They bought their own factory. That's the way to do it. If you want something done in this life, you've got to do it yourself. Now, by taking less profit, okay, Harry's offers great quality products at a very, very fair price, which I'm going to tell you about in a second, okay? Their amazing quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five-blade brand, okay? And the trial set, which you need to get associated with, folks, if you take my advice, includes everything you need for a close and comfortable shave. The weighted ergonomic handle, which I've already told you about, five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Now, let me tell you about this exclusive offer, okay? I really want you to get into this and enjoy the benefits that I've had from Harry's. Support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/porky right now. Let me repeat that, please. harrys.com/porky. Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Delighted to have you along. Thank you very much indeed. I'm with Sam Stevens, of course, Lord Snooty. All right, Sam, so we had a bit of a look at the WAG situation there. Now, listen, as you know, my journals keep me in touch with things happening all around the world.
Yes.
And I need to tell you about a couple of stories which have hit me right between the eyes, which could be very significant in the way the world works, OK? Now, first of all, did you know that the biggest export from India are onions?
Oh, really? I assume that must be because, well, I mean, obviously, there must be a lot of onions in India, I would imagine. And also, of course, there's a lot of onions in Indian cuisine, isn't there? Things like curry, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody thinks that the biggest export from India would be cotton. Would be tea.
Tea would be the one that I would say,
cotton or... No, it's onions. And because there is a crisis in the onion industry in India.
Is there?
The Indian economy might collapse. And it might collapse because they banned the export of onions in India, right?
Right.
And it's a huge overseas currency earner. And it also keeps other Asian countries like Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, excuse me, healthy, you know, food-wise and all that.
Yeah.
And their economy's healthy because it's the biggest trading commodity.
So they're running out of onions, are they, in India?
Well, no, the Indian government have banned them from being exported. A new crisis beckons after the government of India banned onion exports because it is scrambling to try and curb prices of onions that have tripled in recent months. The vegetable has emerged as a symbol of India's mounting economic woes, with consumer confidence fading as growth stalls and unemployment spirals.
Right.
So what they've done is, India has become the most politically charged vegetable in the world. It's a national staple of that country, ubiquitous, as you've already said, in Indian cooking. But fluctuations in onion prices could topple the government.
Well, mind you, the world's not going to collapse if people can't eat onions, are they? I mean, I know onions are important.
No, but
Indian
economy might, and the Indian economy is one of the fastest growing in the world.
Well, it can't be that fast growing if they're having these problems, can it?
Well, they're stopping the export of them because of the inflationary nature of the onion industry. Lorry loads of onions have been turned back from the Indian borders, and the authorities have warned of raids to counter smuggling. The ban has infuriated Indian farmers, for whom the onion is a cash crop, and caused friction with India's neighbours, where once onion prices and onion prices are now rocketing. The onion has long played a role in national politics. Indira Gandhi returned to power in 1980 with the election slogan that used the onion to underline the economic failure of the previous government. Now, why are you sniggering? Didn't you know that the onion was vital to the Indian economy?
I mean, I didn't realise that onions were sort of, you know, so synonymous with India. I must admit, I thought that onions were one of these things that were kind of, as you used the word earlier, ubiquitously grown everywhere.
Yes.
But obviously, they kind of help prop it up somewhat. And it sounds like there's some kind of piracy going on in the onion industry, which is causing some great damage to the ongoing Indian economy. And this is it's a sorry state of affairs, but I can only imagine that there's plenty of onions to go around. It won't be a big problem, and it'll all be sorted out. Do you think it's a more long-term issue?
I think it's long-term. I'll give you some more facts here. India, the world's largest onion producer, harvested 23 million tonnes last year. Imagine 23 million tonnes, right?
Yeah.
That's a ship, isn't it?
Yes,
you know,
yes, it
you
is.
Know, a very
well,
large ship.
It's probably more like 10 ships,
yeah,
actually.
10 ships, yeah, absolutely. But listen to this. That was worth £340 million
right.
In export revenues. Doesn't sound a lot, actually, does it?
No, it doesn't really. No, not in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, billions is usual, is it? Right, this year, drought destroyed huge amounts of the crop, and a heavy monsoon has delayed the next harvest, which was due last month, okay? So a year after collapsing to 1 rupee, which is worth a penny.
Right.
Did you know that? I didn't.
No, I didn't know that.
Per kilo, prompting nationwide protests by farmers who are now losing their farms. Onion prices hit 80 rupees a kilo in the summer because of the drought and the shortage. And that's what's crushing the Indian economy. Can you believe that?
Well, that's unbelievable. But I mean, I can't imagine that it's going to be a sort of case where people are going to be invading India for their onions. I mean, it's not like the oil industry,
listen
is it?
Listen to this. In neighbouring Bangladesh, the biggest buyer of Indian onions, prices have rocketed by 700%. And the vegetable has disappeared from markets. Key state elections are coming, and the Hindu festival season is approaching. And it says politicians have got to get onions back into Bangladesh, or there could be riots.
Well, I know
people could literally start traveling over the border into India, and there could be an Indian onion war.
Well, I mean, that's not a good situation. I mean, I know that things are quite chaotic in India at the best of times. It's quite a populous country, isn't it? Lots of people there. Yeah. There's a lot of kind of crazy people driving and things. You see kind of mad situations with people climbing on trains and all this kind of stuff that goes on in India. It's a bit of a, you know, I'm not sure you'd want some kind of civil war. That could be a bit, or, you know, a riot. That could be a serious problem.
Of course, you don't want civil war. Nobody does. But it just shows you how on the ball you've got to be in this life, Sam, to keep up with world affairs, okay? Because has anybody else told you about the Indian Onion War?
No, they haven't. And no. I was just about to say, you're quite a harbinger of doom when it comes to the food industry, Mike. I mean, you've predicted a lot of times that things, you know, butter's going to be out of stock and chocolate's going to be out of stock and things in
and
the past.
Been
and,
right.
And now you're saying that we could be without onions. I mean, that would be a bit of a disaster for, you know, for us over here if there were
shortages of onions. Well, we grow our own onions, don't we?
Well, I thought we think we do. I mean, I don't imagine where we get our onions from. I can imagine that most of them are grown
Spanish
locally.
Spanish onions.
Spanish onions, yeah.
We
but I imagine
Spanish
if,
onions,
are a lot of them imported from India? I don't know. But I imagine if they are, we could be having trouble with our onion gravy for our Sunday lunch. Having difficulty with our, you know, our Indian cooking from we do that.
You need to know your onions, pal. Now, listen, as I say, this is a bit of an overseas look at what's going on through the eyes of the Porky Journals, okay? Now, the story I really love is the one from Mexico, okay?
All right.
Because have you ever been to Mexico?
I haven't, no, I'd like to, but I haven't been.
I've been to Mexico twice. I once went to Acapulco.
Going loco?
Say again.
Going loco
going
down
loco,
in Acapulco, yeah.
Going loco, you're absolutely right. So I once went to Acapulco, and I thought it'd be the most glamorous place I'd ever been in my life.
Right.
I went there when I was living in America, and I thought, well, you know, when you're in America, no, I mean, the reason why 64% of Americans don't have a passport is because they couldn't care less about leaving America.
Yeah.
Because most of them say, when you leave America, you're not going anywhere. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If you want to go to the Sunshine State, you can go to Florida.
Yeah.
Or you can go to California.
Yeah.
If you want to go skiing, go to Aspen.
Yeah.
Or you can go to the Rockies in Canada, where you don't need a passport because there's no border, right? If you want to go and see heritage, go and look at the Civil War Trail down in the Deep South. You know what I mean? I mean, everything that you want in America is in America.
There's a lot of ancient history in America, is there? But there is some kind of history and culture.
Well, there is really, in the sense that, you know, they all love Plymouth Rock and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Before that, remember, for thousands of years, they had Native Americans.
Of course,
And I don't know why. When you go to America and you go to New York, you go to the Irish bars. I've said this before, and everybody says, give Ireland back to the Irish, you know. What I'd say is, I'd say, give America back to the Native Americans, please.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the biggest act of genocide in history, wasn't it? The white man landing in America, the New World, and then brutally just wiping out...
Turf them out, yeah.
Tribes of what were then called American Indians, right?
Yeah.
Because we had guns and they didn't. I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't all the protesters start protesting about that?
Yeah, huh? I completely agree with you.
I mean, I agree that America's improved since the age of the tepee and the bow and arrow and the buffaloes on the plain and all that, okay?
They've been confined to sort of quite small areas now, haven't they, the Native Americans?
They make a lot of money, some American tribes now, because they run huge casinos.
Of course they do, yes.
On what used to be called the... what do they call the places? The
reservations.
The reservations, that's right, but not called reservations anymore. However, I think it's a brilliant culture, the Native Americans, and I used to read a lot about it. The Earth Was Weeping is a famous book about how the Apaches got wiped out and all that kind of stuff, so I'll tell you all about that one day. Now, so... So anyway, in Mexico, I went down to Acapulco.
Yep.
And it was the seediest place I've ever been.
Oh, really?
It was crap, honestly. It was so run down. So what we all knew about Acapulco was the days of Frank Sinatra, who we mentioned, I think, earlier in this podcast or the last one.
Mentions it, of course, in Fly Me to the Moon, doesn't he? Acapulco Bay and all that.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah.
Fly me. I thought that was Matt Monro. Fly me to the moon.
Well, I think Matt Monro probably did a version as well. Every crooner's covered that, haven't they?
Okay. But I mean, you know, it was all about this bloke who dives off this cliff, doesn't he? Has to get the wave right and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen that, yeah. But also, it was like glamorous pictures of Jackie Kennedy water skiing and all that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
When I got there, it was dreadful.
Run down?
Yeah, terribly run down. You know, shoddy beaches. I mean, the front was lined not with, you know, exotic cocktail bars and all that. All the pizza companies had moved in.
Oh, right.
You know, Pizza Hut and all fast food and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't even like Mexico, honestly. It was dreadful.
Was it like a sort of an American kind of mock town or by that
Yeah,
stage?
It was really. Right. Yeah, yeah. But there was nothing exotic about it whatsoever.
Right.
In fact, I met a girl there. She was a lawyer from Enfield.
Oh, nothing exotic about her then either.
Well, sort of. She was there to get over some sort of broken romance.
Oh, was she?
I helped heal her broken heart.
Did you?
And I was a bit of a louse, really, because I said we'd get back in touch when I got back to England.
Right.
But we never did.
Right, you never spoke to her again?
No.
No wonder the search for the first Mrs. Parry was from the start, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah, I suppose that's true. But the other time I went was I went to Tijuana. When I first went to America years and years ago with my mate, we literally went over on a package holiday because we were adventurous. we were young in our early 20s, and we went to, first of all, we went to San Francisco, one of the world's great towns, and I've been back there two or three times since.
I'd love to go to San Francisco.
You know, I left my heart in San Francisco. That's the Tony Bennett one. And there's a piano bar in San Francisco off Union Square where you can go in, you can pick up the mic, you can sing that because the words come up on the karaoke screen.
Oh, yeah.
And then they give you a copy of it, you know, that
they've
recorded.
Yeah, great.
And your picture is on the cover like it was a 45 disc.
Oh, I'd love a bit of that. That's a bit of me.
So your picture's on the cover, you know, San Francisco by Mike Parry, you know what I mean? And it's all, you know, produced like a professional record. It's absolutely brilliant.
As opposed to Are You Going to San Francisco, of course, which is a...
Well, the other two I remember is Scott somebody.
That's him.
What's his name? Scotty?
I'll come back to me in a minute.
If you go... There were two. If you go to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair.
Yes, that's right.
But the other one was... Have you ever been to San Francisco? And that's probably the same one.
That's the same song. Yeah,
but there was another one during the great hippie era of 67, 68. If you go to San Francisco, wear flowers in your hair. And the other one was, in San Francisco. That's the same one. Okay. Yeah. Well, there is another one. I just can't get it right. Anyway, so we went there first. And then from there, we went to Las Vegas. For 3 days, that was a brilliant experience. But I don't actually like Las Vegas.
Is that not a bit seedy as well?
The thing about Las Vegas is, right, as you get older, it becomes more apparent. There's nowhere private in Las Vegas. So the first time I went with my mate, it was all loud casinos all night long and gambling. And look, you can gamble on $1 tables, you know. It's easy. And fast food joints and all that kind of stuff. But it's about four times the size it was from the time I first went there. And the last couple of times I've gone has been to cover boxing, Ricky Hatton, or some gambling event for TalkSport, you know. And I just find it now so overpowering. It's never quiet. You can't find anywhere private. You can't even go to a restaurant to have a quiet dinner. Everything is so loud. There are fruit machines in every building in Las Vegas. You see what I mean?
Yes.
You know, and you can't get away from it. And then the third stop was Los Angeles.
Yes.
Which is really a lot of nothing. Because Los Angeles doesn't actually exist. It's a collection of little towns.
You think that everybody in Los Angeles is mad, don't you?
Yeah, they are. Well, most people in California are mad.
Are they?
They tow, like, bricks around. Well,
they drive a lot of electric cars and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, they're all mad, yeah. Electric cars have had their day, by the way. We can get onto that later. And so, because there was not a lot to do in Los Angeles, Santa Monica's nice. You went to the King's Head Park.
Oh, yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
We got a car and we drove down to Tijuana. But... that's the worst place I've ever been.
Really?
Just dreadful. I mean, you know, the Tijuana Brass and all that. That was a guy called Herb Alpert. You know, he used to play the trumpet.
Yes.
But it was really crap, honestly. So anyway, look, we're getting near the end now. So the reason I was telling that story,
Yeah, Mexican, there's a Mexican story.
So it's this mayor in a Mexican town called Las Margaritas,
right,
which is great,
right,
isn't it? If you drink margaritas, you
know
what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's the mayor. And all the local farmers have been asking him for months to repair the road from their farms into town to the market.
Right.
And they're not getting repaired.
I see.
So they eventually blow their top because Mexicans can be quite fiery individuals.
Can they? Is that not slightly stereotypical?
Well, probably. But, I mean, they are. You know, they're hot-blooded people. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And so they rushed up to the mayor's office in the town hall. And they dragged him out, right. And then they... tied his feet up, right?
Did they?
Yeah, and then they tied him to the back of a 4x4 pickup truck and they drove off and dragged him down the pothole road, okay? Yeah, right. While he was screaming and shouting, you know, and all this kind of stuff. That's right, yeah.
It's slightly aggressive approach. Yeah, exactly.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I mean,
weren't happy then.
Yeah, no, they weren't happy. And as they were driving out, you know, other farmers were coming out and beating his sticks and all that, you know.
Right,
and he barely survived, you know. And now they're all, like, being tried for, you know, attempted murder and all
that
kind
of stuff.
Maybe they
dragged him through the pothole to sort of prove that it was there.
That's right, absolutely right. But anyway, the last time I heard anybody being treated like that was William Wallace. You know Braveheart?
Oh, yeah.
My name is William Wallace. And when they tried him at Westminster and he was found guilty of treason, hung, drawn and quartered at Smithfield Market.
Oh, yeah.
They tied his ankles together and then tied them to a horse and they dragged him all the way to Smith Market. And you'd say to yourself, how did he survive? They must have scoured his back. The thing is, in those days, the roads were mostly soil. You see what I mean?
Oh, I see what you mean,
mud,
yeah.
Mud and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't being pulled over concrete for miles.
No, that's right, yeah, but he didn't survive. Right, well, okay, Sam, those are just a couple of overseas stories I wanted to tell you about. There are others, which we'll have to get to next time. But I want to thank everybody once again for listening to Planet Porky. Sam, I want to thank you.
Thank
for,
you.
For having been with me. Remind people, please, where they can get hold of you.
Yes, I'm at SamStevens71 on Twitter, if you'd like to get hold of me.
That's right, and I'm on at Mike Parry 8, but we are both on at Planet Porky.
Yes.
And Gmail address there is planetporkypod@gmail.com. Please don't fail to get in touch. We've enjoyed some of your responses over our last couple of podcasts, and we will enjoy more. Thank you very much. Back with you soon. Apparently, he was only about 5'2".
Oh, was he?
And he came strolling down the gangplank, you know. And all the guys in our profession in those days had these huge box cameras, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And was be standing there, you know, with a pencil and a notepad, you know. Hey, Mickey!
Yeah?
Hey, Mickey, you know, how's things in Hollywood? And he apparently stopped, looked at them and answered, I am Hollywood. It wasn't even like Mexico, honestly. It was dreadful.
Was it like a sort of an American kind of mock town? Or like that
yeah, stage? It was really. Right. Yeah, yeah. But there was nothing exotic about it whatsoever.
Right.
In fact, I met a girl there. She was a lawyer from Enfield.
Oh, nothing exotic about her then either.
Well, sort of. She was there to get over some sort of broken romance.
Oh, was she?
I helped heal her broken heart.
Did you?
And I was a bit of a louse, really, because I said we'd get back in touch when I got back to England.
Right.
But we never did.
Right, you never spoke to her again?
No.
No wonder the search for the first Mrs. Parry was always moved from the start, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah, I suppose that's true. Have you ever been to San Francisco? That's probably the same one.
That's the same song, yeah.
Well, but there was another one during the great hippie era of 67, 68. If you go to San Francisco, wear flowers in your hair. And the other one was, in San Francisco. That's the same one, yeah. So is this mayor in a Mexican town called Las Margaritas,
right,
which is great,
right,
isn't it? If you drink margaritas, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's the mayor.